Welcome to Federal Insights, Zero Trust from Theory to Reality, sponsored by Akamai.
Few federal agencies are as data intensive as the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Tom Temin here. Ensuring the security of that data fell to Robert Hembrook, until recently director of the Cybersecurity Division in the Office of the Chief Information Officer. We discuss the scope of NOAA's data resources and his strategy for safeguarding it.
You look across NOAA, NOAA consists of six different line offices, which range from the National Environmental Satellite Data and Information Service, which runs both geostationary and polar orbiting and low Earth orbiting satellites, as well as parking stuff out in halfway between the Earth and the Sun and the Lagrange point, halfway point gravitationally, to study the effects of coronal mass ejections and those sorts of things on the Earth. So our mission starts at the Sun and goes all the way to the bottom of the ocean, because you've got the National Ocean Service and the National Marine Fisheries Service, both of which are looking at our water-based resources from an environmental and from an economic standpoint. And then you've got, you know, all that information that feeds into the National Weather Service, which NOAA is mostly known for, which predicts weather events, checks stream runoff, other things like that, looks for basically fires, floods, and pestilence, right? Everything that could go horribly wrong on land and in the air. As well as we got people who fly our planes and drive our ships, and they have important information there in the Office of Marine and Aviation Operations. And so when you look across all those six different line offices, you're looking at the air, you're looking at the water, you're looking at the land, you're looking at space, all that data comes in a tremendous different variety of things, from a little, if you'll pardon the pun, trickle of data coming from a weir that measures how much water is running through a river, all the way to the amount of information raining down from the sky from the geostationary satellites, which has to be crunched into numbers and turned into weather forecasts every 30 minutes. It's a tremendous amount of data. We produce petabytes of data every day, so it just goes and goes.
And give us a sense of the variety of formats, because I think all of these different types of platforms don't gather the same type of data, technically.
Correct. I mean, you're going everything from flat file, like your common ordinary office files, like spreadsheets to track numbers of fish in their locations, all the way to extremely convoluted sensor data coming down that's looking at 16 different bands of atmospheric water vapor using different spectra of the electromagnetic spectrum to look at. So those data sets vary anywhere from full motion video to still images to numeric data to relational databases. It's a pretty broad spectrum.
And I imagine those six different divisions of operations plus the variety of data types lead to an assortment of systems and networks that it's all stored on.
Yes, NOAA has over 90 different FISMA systems categorized that we monitor and track and check the health of and check the authorization to operate on an annual basis. And they're split unevenly between those different line offices and across all three levels of low, moderate, and high impact. And, you know, the confidentiality and the integrity and the availability of all that data is critical to us, because it is taxpayer-funded data, it is scientific data, and it does help the world. But we have to find that balance between putting that data in a way that people can use to the best benefit without exposing where the source of it or the methodology that's used to produce it is, because you need to see the meteorologic data. You don't need access to the supercomputer that made it.
And you have a variety of data customers, as you hinted at just now, from other government agencies to commercial entities, such as the weather producers that use National Weather Service data as their source of information, which they then send out commercially.
Absolutely. Our information is used in models, which are then used for creating all kinds of data in that way. And we also, you know, the Federal Aviation Administration, the Department of Defense use NOAA data in order to ensure the safety of their ships and aircraft. Our coast survey data that where we check, you know, after a hurricane comes to move the mud around in the bed of a river, that's part of a harbor, and it's very important doing harbor surveys to make sure commercial shipping traffic come and go. So you're talking to everybody from state, local, tribal, city level government agencies, all the way up to national level and international agreements. We have international sharing agreements with a number of different nations for the products that we produce.
We're speaking with Robert Hembrook. He's director of the Cybersecurity Division in the Office of the CIO at NOAA. And describe for us the architectural approach that you take to cybersecurity as we zero in on this idea of zero trust. But give us the large level picture of how you approach cyber for the huge diversity of systems that you have to watch for.
Well, first, on a planning phase and on a paperwork and a doctrinal phase, you have to have a strategic view of where you are and where you want to be. You have to have operational art that tells you how to get to where you want to be. And then at the tactical level, you really have to understand the actual individual systems and the people who run them and the data that they host. So from an architectural standpoint, from cybersecurity, we have a layered approach for that as well from a technical level. So everything from our trusted internet connection access points inwards to our enclaves to the varying different mechanisms we have across all that. And then we instrument that and feed that into common locations so that way we can monitor that.
And do you have your own network or security operations center? Do you outsource that? Do you have a government-owned facility staffed by contractors? What's your approach there?
We have a facility in Fairmont, West Virginia, which is staffed by contract staff, overseen by government officials who monitor and operate those systems.
Also, if you could comment on supercomputing that is under the direction of NOAA, because that's a major component that not every agency has, and what kind of special considerations does that require?
Well, the biggest thing with supercomputing, obviously, is you're crunching an enormous amount of data, thus the super. And so in order to move the data from where it comes down, namely the sensors and where they deploy that data down to on the Earth, whether it be air or space-based or whether it's wired into, you have to then shuttle huge amounts of data to a place where the supercomputer can use it because they're in limited numbers of locations. Then once the computer's done, you have to shuffle the output of that where it needs to go for people to be able to use it. So having a very wide bandwidth, high availability network, which we do have through our partners with Internet 2, gives us the ability to shuffle data internal to NOAA and then goes through our TICAPs and then has our aggregation ring outside of that to shuffle data to our clients outside of NOAA. That's really critical because the number of computers we have is limited. The amount of compute they have is maxed out pretty much all the time. So being able to effectively and efficiently use those resources, we have to move a lot of data to a lot of places.
Robert Hembrook was until recently director of the Cybersecurity Division in the Office of the Chief Information Officer at NOAA. He's now working for the Air Force Cyber Command. We'll return after this short break when Hembrook discusses the applications that also require cyber protection. I'm Tom Temin.
The network perimeter has traditionally defined the boundaries of security, but today agencies need protection wherever applications, data, users, and devices are, both on and off network. Agencies should be doubling down with a zero-trust approach to security. This is Randy Wood, Vice President, U.S. Public Sector for Akamai. Akamai is a leader in mitigating malware, bot, and DDoS attacks and is trusted by all branches of the military and 14 cabinet-level agencies.
Learn more at akamai.com/zero-trust. That's A-K-A-M-A-I.
Welcome back to our interview with Robert Hembrook, recently the director of the Cybersecurity Division in the Office of the Chief Information Officer at NOAA. And we've talked about data, we've talked about networks, and what about the application population? Because that's the reason that people need all of this stuff.
Absolutely. And if you just go to one of the app stores, whether whichever flavor you choose, you'll see dozens or hundreds or thousands of apps that use NOAA data. Whether it be for predictive analysis, so there are people who do their own weather forecasting. I know a fellow who is in my Army Reserve unit who does his own weather forecasting for fun. He has a background in meteorology, and he has an app that he uses that he pulls down NOAA data, does his own interpretation of it, and then that allows him to publish his forecasts. And he was actually able to get some predictive warnings out to folks in the local area a month ago when there was tornadoes sweeping through the southeast U.S., and that helped them get a little bit of a lead time of getting to safety. So making sure that that data is available and correct is critically important, because we also saw an instance a few years back during the hurricane season where people were taking NOAA imagery, putting their own interpretation on that was wrong, and publishing it on their Facebook site saying, look, oh no, Houston's going to get hit by another hurricane, when really that one turned right and went up the East Coast. So integrity of the data is critically important, but the number of apps that are out there, we don't control a lot of the people who write those apps. So they plug into our APIs and they use our data and they interpret it as they see fit, and we don't have any real control over that. But making sure that we give them the best, cleanest quality data for them to work on is critically important.
And I was thinking also of the applications used by the various component agencies under NOAA.
Yes, we have definitely our own homegrown and commercial off-the-shelf tools that we use to provide like the forecast data out to forecasters in 1,000 different locations across the country, as well as just tons of different applications that are internally written for special purpose use, for example, looking where the fish are or tracking marine mammals or making sure that the safety of the harbors is there. So a lot of that is very specialized and very proprietary sort of stuff. And so we need to make sure that we, again, provide clean and safe data to the people who need it and can use it in the right way.
And I guess maybe the final piece here to describe this whole environment would be the endpoints. And to what extent are NOAA users mobile in their devices that they use? And I guess the supercomputer users have to use terminals connected directly there. So give us a sense of the diversity of devices.
Well, the Internet of Things and the ability to use mobile devices are both important because people want to be able to get to data where they're at rather than having to go to where the data is. And so, you know, most people still sit at a desk and sit in front of a desktop, which is the coin of the realm when it comes to computing these days. But we do enable people who have mobile devices, whether it be tablets or phones or just a laptop that has a wireless connection, to get out and go do their work from where they are, which is useful. For example, when we have a weather event in the D.C. National Capital Area, most of our people can telework from home rather than putting themselves and their lives in danger by getting out on the roads to get here, and that enables them to continue to perform their mission even though they're not physically present.
Plus, you do have airplanes, ships, and submarines.
Absolutely. We have our own little fleet of ships and our own group of airplanes that we fly. We have unmanned and manned above water and underwater vehicles, and the whole spectrum of things that all provide data and all require good control of things to make sure that that data is, as I said, clean and correct.
All right, let's get to some of the cybersecurity particulars here. What give us the, again, starting at the 50,000-foot view of how you approach cybersecurity, user access, and making sure that networks are secure, and I guess maybe touch on, do you take a data-centric approach, a network-centric approach, or a user-centric approach, or some combination?
It is a combination of both. I mean, security begins and ends with you know, you look at the four phases of CDM. They're a great way of describing out what you're looking at. You got to look at your network. What do you have on it? And that's not just the wires itself, but the endpoints, the things that it's connected to, all the hidden devices that you don't think about. So your architecture. Once you understand that, and you understand the people who are on it, then what do those people do and what kind of information they need access to, what kind of information are you holding, then when we marry all those four things up together, that creates kind of the total picture. So you have to look at it from each of those approaches. So good cyber hygiene at the endpoint level and at the machine level is important. Understanding your network architecture is important, making sure all that stuff is linked in and logged together so that it shares that information so that way we can monitor it and make sure that things aren't going bad is important. On the person side, obviously identity management is important. Issuing out proper tokens, using two-factor authentication, using role-based authentication to make sure that the right person can get access to the right data and the wrong person can't. That way good people can use good data and bad people can't is important. And then just from the tools and techniques we have, obviously I'm not going to go into a lot of detail that would expose us, but for the tools and techniques that we have to monitor all that, goes to a central location, as I said, that's our facility that we have that has a network operations and security center that also has a computer incident response team. So that way when something goes awry, we've got a team who's right there in the middle of it to get the problem solved and mitigated.
Is the zero trust concept something that is in your mind or in the way you approach cyber?
Yes, it is. In terms of the high-level concept of what zero trust means, which is really instead of giving broad brush approaches to permissions and abilities, you granularize that in such a way that the right person can get to the right data. That's very difficult to put into practice, obviously, particularly when you're talking about an agency that was started in the Nixon administration, so we have a lot of information that's out there. But understanding the basics of those concepts and why those concepts are important is definitely part of our strategy.
And tell us some more about some of the details then of how you try to implement it such that people only have access to those resources that they are entitled to, and that you can verify that the person logging on is who they say they are or who they are trying to be.
Well, HSPD-12 and Identity Access Management was very good at helping us to get our hands around who the people are, because it moves us in the direction of using tokens and using two-factor authentication. So that way it's much more difficult to spoof who the individual is. Then once you get forward into that, then you start looking at the different systems that people have access to. And it's fairly easy to control people at the OU level or at the system level, because then you can, you're limiting yourself to a certain number of users who can use that. Getting down to the next level of understanding the data you have itself, that is a developing process, because as I said, we have a lot of data and a lot of that was not ever designed to be, categorized in this sort of way. So we're rolling that out as time and resources allow, which, as you know, in the federal space does take a minute. And our planning horizon, unfortunately, when it comes to budgets and such, are done year by year as appropriations allow. But the vision is there so that years from now we'll be able to have a soup to nuts solution.
For those people accessing data externally, say through the APIs for whatever purpose might be, suppose it is a commercial entity. Let's talk about those first. What are some of the architectural elements you have in place to make sure that those withdrawals, you might say, are trustworthy and that no one is trying to alter data or in some way use it in the way they should not be?
Right. Well, and that really boils down to the, at the end of the day, it's the responsibility of the authorizing official and the system owner to ensure that the data that they're hosting is where it's supposed to be in a proper location. In other words, you put the right things in the right buckets. That way, when someone has access to that bucket, they're only getting access to something they need, and either A, they don't get into a different bucket, or B, you didn't put the wrong things in that bucket. And so there's a lot of that responsibility rests on the people who generate the data themselves, because there aren't enough resources in the day for another organization to look over someone else's data and make that decision. But I think that people understand that principle fairly well and ensure that they put the right of data out there so it's available to the folks who need it.
Robert Hembrook of the Air Force Cyber Command was until recently director of the Cybersecurity Division in the Office of the Chief Information Officer at NOAA. More of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
Government is facing more cyber attacks than ever before. The traditional perimeter no longer exists. There is no inside or outside when it comes to detecting, defending, and deterring attacks. With every agency at risk, IT departments should be doubling down with a zero-trust approach to security. Akamai is a leader in mitigating malware, bot, and DDoS attacks and is trusted by all branches of the military and 14 cabinet-level agencies. To mitigate your next attack, visit akamai.com/zero-trust. akamai.com/zero-trust.
Welcome back to the final segment of our interview with Robert Hembrook, until recently director of the Cybersecurity Division in the Office of the Chief Information Officer at NOAA. And do you have a system whereby, say, data can be cached at the publicly accessible places, but still protected in a safe way behind a firewall, such that if someone gets something that's beyond that and they alter it, it doesn't change the fundamental store that you have? That's the system of record.
Right. Well, one of the guiding principles we have is a separation between where the compute happens and where we store and disseminate the data. So having a dissemination bucket that is different than the golden copy, if you will, is very important in that architecture. Exactly so.
We're speaking with Robert Hembrook, director of the Cybersecurity Division in the Office of the CIO at NOAA. And for internal users, maybe someone working in the satellite area would love to see marine data, but it's really none of their business because of their role. How do you set it up so that there's that sense of zero trust or limited access takes place?
Well, in a perfect world, all the data would be tagged and everybody would know what it's for, which implies that you have a taxonomy and a hierarchy of how to name and trust that data. The real world is a little messier than that, but fundamentally, again, it's back to the data owner and the system owner to categorize the information that they have and put it in places where people can get to it. So there isn't once you're in the network, you have access to everything. It's still very narrowly confined based on system use and role and appropriateness.
And do you automate that process? Because that's a lot of work to make sure that each user is given the profile that they should have.
I definitely think that automation is going to help with that on that. Right now, like I said, it's mostly down to the system level, but I definitely think that there are a lot of tools available that we already have in place, and there are ways to implement them, like the Zero Trust methodology, that will make that automation more effective and more robust.
And by the way, NOAA, if I recall, is an agency that has the PIV card, even though it's not a DOD agency. Is that true?
We have a uniform service. So there are four military services, but there are actually seven uniform services in the United States government. And the NOAA Corps, which is about 310 officers, which serve on our ships and then our aircraft as commanders. And those folks are since they're a uniform service, that gave us a way of getting into a CAC card as an identification token. That's one of several different tokens we have depending on people's role and people's mission. But that helps us inherit a lot of that infrastructure from DOD, which simplifies our life a lot.
Yeah, because the PIV card has been surprisingly durable as a technology and as an approach to giving zero trust and to just basic security.
Yeah, it's coming up on 2 decades of service right now. So, I mean, the PIV card has been a very robust and very reliable tool. And I think it's a good tool to implement. It really enables us to do everything from encryption of hard drives for laptops all the way up to user-based authentication with a two-factor login for the common user plugging in their machine at their desk.
And talk a little bit more about the two-factor authentication, where it's applied, and which factors you might prefer for the other users?
Well, in cases where people don't qualify for a CAC, we can issue them a different sort of token with that same goal in mind of something you have and something you know, because that way if something you have is stolen, they don't know what you know, i.e. your PIN, and that enables us to protect it's much harder to falsify that and breach in that way. Eliminating user ID and password, which are both two things you know, has been critical in ensuring the safety and security of data. And across the government, I think the U.S. has made great strides in advancing that.
So you are users of one-time generated types of tokens on devices?
We use a mix of structures between the PIV cards. We do also use RSA tokens or other brands of tokens that are one-time. And we have one-time use pads. We have key generators that you can carry around on your phone. So you log in and it challenges you and you put in the six-digit PIN. We have a wide variety of tools which add robustness and richness to the security equation.
And I guess we should mention that at the time of this recording, you were at NOAA. But since then, as it airs, you have moved on to a new cybersecurity job. Tell us a little bit about where you will have headed.
I'm heading to 24th Air Force Cyber Command, San Antonio, Texas, to take on the role of their Deputy Director of Operations and Deputy Director of Networking. I think that's an excellent opportunity for me to kind of get back to my roots in the DoD and kind of help take the fight to the enemy, because even though we're not necessarily in high risk operations on a daily basis in the military, except for in a couple locations now as those sorts of physical wars have cooled down, we're in constant battle on a day in, day out basis with our enemies. Economic espionage, intellectual property theft, and just outright reconnaissance of our networks to see what the bad guys could possibly do to disrupt our operations should it ever come to conflict between our nations. And there's also non-nation states and hackers for hire who are constantly beating up against this nation on a daily basis. And I don't know if the body politics sees that in the same way that folks in my business tend to. And so it's encouraging for me to be able to take the perspective and the skills I've learned here in the last few years at NOAA and parlay them back into the DoD and help them take that fight to the bad guys.
And a final question, what are the best ways to enlist users in this battle that you've just described to protect precious federal assets, of the United States? Because they have to live under the regimes for security that administrators put on them, but they can also be used as eyes and ears and protectors also, can't they?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, sensitizing the user to the fact that security is not something that gets in the way of mission accomplishment, it's something that enables mission accomplishment. You can't do your job if your computer doesn't work. Your computer doesn't work if you don't keep it safe. All the data you have is worthless if someone comes in and corrupts it or encrypts it and then asks you for ransom. So the end user is the first line of defense we have. And educating them on that and evangelizing with them the importance of what we do and the importance of what they do to ensure that we have mission continuity is critically important. And the more those folks you can get on board and for them to realize that, oh, this isn't just hokey stuff that you guys just make life hard for me, but no, really, it is actually something that keeps me safe, that enables me to do the mission. I mean, nobody likes seatbelts, but everybody knows they save lives. Everybody should understand, however, that if you have your seatbelt on, it keeps you safe in the car even when you're not in a crash. It keeps you from sliding around on curves and keeps you from hitting the steering wheel when on braking. So by the same token, putting your cyber seatbelt on every time you get onto your computer ensures that computer is going to get to its destination and so will you safely.
Robert Hembrook was until recently the director of the Cybersecurity Division in the office of the Chief Information Officer at NOAA. He's now with Air Force Cyber Command. To listen to this interview in its entirety, log on to federalnewsnetwork.com and search Federal Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights Zero Trust from Theory to Reality, sponsored by Akamai on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. The entire program can be found on demand at federalnewsnetwork.com. Search Zero Trust.